The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
You know how to book flights and hotels. All you're missing is a tool to plan the travel experiences you'll have once you arrive. That's why you need Viator. Book guided tours, activities, excursions, and more in one place to make your trip truly unforgettable. Viator has over 300,000 travel experiences to choose from. Everything from simple tours to extreme adventures and all the niche, interesting stuff in between. So you can plan something that everyone you're traveling with will enjoy. Real traveler reviews give the inside scoop from people who've already been on the experiences you're considering, so you can plan with confidence. Free cancellation helps you plan for the unexpected, and 24/7 customer support means you can travel worry-free. Download the Viator app now and use code Viator10 for 10% off your first booking in the app. Find travel experiences for you. Do more with Viator.
I am the man, sick with the slang, sick and I'm destined for fame. Do for the fam, not for the gram, stunt me is destined for pain. I do not front, I do not scam, put some respect on my name. Sick like a bane, click and I bang, y'all gon' remember the name.
What's up, ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls around the world? I would like to welcome you back to the Real Talk with Zuby podcast. On today's episode, we have got on a writer and ghostwriter, and this is the one and only Joshua Lysak. Welcome to the show, man.
Thanks, Zuby. Glad to be here with you today.
Awesome, man. Joshua, I've done a very brief intro there, but for people who are not familiar with you and your work, please tell them a little bit about yourself.
Yes. So as we said, I'm a ghostwriter. I have ghostwritten more than 80 books, the vast majority of which have been nonfiction, full-length nonfiction for entrepreneurs, for experts, for people who want to assert the authority that they have already earned inside of their industry. Some have been bestsellers and award winners, and others have sold 1,000 copies, but half of those were to their sales qualified leads, and they use that to build multi-million dollar businesses. So it's a little bit of this, a little bit of that in my world.
I hear that, man. How did you get into the world of writing and perhaps ghostwriting in particular?
Completely by accident. My goal as a youngster was to be a novelist one day. I was inspired by all of the great Western fantasy epics. And so when I was 19 years old, 20 years old, I got a 2-book publishing deal for novels that I had written. And then something interesting happened. I'm signing copies. I'm doing local events. And two people, independent of one another, asked me the same question. They said, Joshua, I really like your book. Can you help me with mine? It's a memoir, like it's my life story, but I want it to read like fiction. And I said, okay, fine, sure. I'll help you with your book. And I've been saying, okay, fine, sure, ever since.
That's so interesting, man. So how long have you been doing it for now then?
Just over 12 years.
Okay. And I'm curious about ghostwriting. I have mixed feelings on it because I don't think I'd ever use a ghostwriter. Being a creative myself and wanting to be the one who puts the words down on the paper. But what are the main reasons why people use ghostwriting? Because I think it's a little bit of a controversial subject, because certainly in the world of music, for example, I mean, there's artists who everyone knows they don't write their own songs, and that's like fine. But say in the world of hip hop and rap, if someone isn't writing their own lyrics, then that's like a massive faux pas. That's like a no, you can't do that. Like as a rapper, you have to write your own stuff. So I'm curious with other forms of writing and artistic mediums, what the sort of views and attitudes are on that. How prominent is ghostwriting in the world of writing and publishing?
Anywhere between 85 and 93% of best-selling books are ghostwritten, both fiction.
Wow. And wait. No way. Wait, you just said 90% are ghostwritten?
That's right.
So that means that the person who actually wrote the book is not the author's name you see on the book.
That's right.
Okay, I think you just blew a lot of minds, including mine. And that's for fiction as well, not just nonfiction.
That's right, fiction and nonfiction. Fiction by best-selling authors tends to have a small group of authors, or rather ghostwriters. If you've ever seen authors who are somehow able to release one or two new books every quarter, these are the ones that are perpetually at the top of the bestseller lists. Those are the most notable examples of authors who have a small team of ghostwriters who are working on various chapters so that they can quickly turn the author's outline and gist for the plot into the first, second, revised, third, and final draft. Nonfiction is usually just a ghostwriter that's collaborating with the author, sometimes with the publishing house's editor, or if it's independent, it's just the author themselves. There's not as much controversy in the literary world as in music. I think it's because it's so widely known that if you are a famous author, you obviously had a ghostwriter. There was a...
You know what? I don't think that's known by the general population. I don't think that's known by the general population. I didn't know that. And yeah,
It's not as controversial.
I would have thought maybe, you know, when you said 90%, well, number one, where's that 90% from? Where's that statistic come from?
That's what we have had perpetually in the publishing industry. When if you look at how many books are ghostwritten, you're going to find anywhere from 85 to 93. It's so well known. It's like, is gravity real at this point? Like, well,
interesting.
Yeah, it's just depending on which theory and explanation. It's kind of similar in the literary world. It's so much so that authors will mention their ghostwriter in the acknowledgments, or sometimes as their coach or as their editor, or they'll have their name with, in small font on the book cover, their ghostwriter. And the reason so many authors, the prominent authors and future prominent authors, use a ghostwriter is not for lack of talent, because so often many of these authors who are bestsellers are people who are accomplished writers themselves, be it long form or short form. The issue is time. It takes a long time to write a book, time that they don't have. And so it's much faster to spend a few hours with the ghostwriter telling them, okay, here are the specific stories I want to include. Do the rest of the research yourself, put something together, and I'll have a look at each chapter draft and make sure it's good enough. So my authors will spend anywhere from 1 to 2 hours a week tops on their book project. Whereas if they're doing it themselves, it would be 1 to 2 hours every morning and probably every night as well.
Wow. Okay. I have a lot of questions. I mean, what is the purpose of the author then? I mean, if 90% of books are written by someone other than the author, I mean, number one, why don't those ghostwriters become the published author whose name is on the book? And two, what is the purpose of the author? I mean, it sounds like they're more like an executive director or executive producer rather than an author if they're not the ones doing the actual writing. So I'm curious about that.
The executive director, executive producer analogy works well. The reason why the author's name is on the cover and it's their book is because it's their beliefs, their stories, their opinions, their experiences, their message for the world. It's an analogy that I've heard used by my own clients is, I don't do my own taxes. I don't draw up my own contracts. Why would I write my own book?
Because you're supposed to be
professional for the same reason.
Well, I think that's silly. Cause I think if you're an author, like if you're a musician and you don't play the music or you don't write, I think it's different in the creative world to me. You know, someone could say this is me being precious, but I don't think so. I think in the creative world, if I say that I'm a painter, if I hire a painter to go and paint something and then I stick my signature in the corner, but I didn't actually paint it, then I'm not a painter. I think if you don't write books, you're not an author.
The stories, ideas, experiences, and opinions reflect those of the author rather than of the ghostwriter. So on any given day, I'm writing for people who I fundamentally disagree with on many issues, be it religion or politics or any other issue. But the point of hiring a ghostwriter is someone who wants to write a book, who hasn't written a book before, it would be the same learning curve as if they said, okay, I'm going to now figure out how to do all of my own taxes, or how I'm going to figure out how to draw up a professional contract. Well, it's my contract. Yeah. You know, it's my name on it.
But those people don't call themselves accountants, do they?
But it is their taxes. It is their contracts that they're
signing. I have an accountant, but I wouldn't, if I go and I tell people I'm an accountant, but I don't do my own accounts and I've hired an accountant to do my accounts. Or if I say that I'm a rapper and someone else is writing and rapping my songs and then I'm sticking my name on it. I mean, I'm not a rapper at that point, am I?
It could be a difference in industries. I have seen when a musician, when it comes out that they're accused of having a ghostwriter, you'll often find that that word is used, accused, meaning that there is, as you said earlier, a professional faux pas, or there is some sort of a scandal that breaks out around that person and they have to deny it. There's no such similar issue in books and in writing. With the limited situation being with literary works like novels, like, oh, this is my novel. This is a book that I literally wrote all by myself. You'll find some celebrities will say, and those of us in the know go, sure you did. You literally wrote every single word yourself. So who do you use? The chick over on Long Island? And then, of course, we all know. Yeah, that is. Especially with nonfiction books, the feedback that I get from authors who want to come out and say, hey, Joshua Lysak wrote my book. It's going to sell more copies. So they're going to do a YouTube interview with me. They will often tag me on social media. I'll even come on their podcast and talk about the story behind the book. But the idea is that the same reason you might use an editor, or you use a copy editor, you might use a proofreader. Think of it as an editor, copy editor, or proofreader for the ideas themselves. What's the best way to communicate something in a long form way for someone who's never done that before? Maybe they've written successful blog posts, or they've given interviews, or they've written email newsletters. Well, what about for those people who they haven't written a book before and they want to make sure it's the best way they could have structured it, the best way they could have said it? And so in their minds, and that's why the analogy that they'll often use is, well, I have a lawyer who draws up my contracts for me, and it's me whose name and his letterhead is on the contract. They want it to be right, especially the bigger the audience they have, the higher the risk of getting it wrong, wasting time. And so the more important it is to delegate to a professional across your various domains when it comes to managing your personal brand. So most people don't edit their own videos. For example, the clients that I have, they don't edit their own podcasts. They, in many cases, don't even come up with the names of the episodes or even the questions asked. They're team. They delegate so much. But there's some things that creative personalities just, they can't delegate. And that's okay. I'm not a ghostwriter for everyone. There's people who want to write their stuff themselves, and that's okay. I don't draw up contracts for my lawyer clients, and they don't hire somebody else to draw up their own contracts. That's what they do because that's their domain of expertise.
Yeah, it's an interesting perspective, man. I don't think, I think maybe in the literary world, it's well known that most books are ghostwritten. I do not think that is known amongst the general public at all. And I do think that if the general public were to find that out, I don't think people would actually be cool with it, funnily enough. I don't think it's I think it might be an industry, like a well-known industry, not secret. Outside of that, I genuinely don't think most people know that. I think if you were to poll people and ask them if they think, like, the author whose name is on the books that they read and that they love, if they believe that the author actually wrote it, I think most people would say yes.
The little cues are the whoever a co-author might be, or this person's name with someone you never heard of.
Yeah, but most books don't have that. I know books that have that, right? I know books that have main author, you know, with so-and-so, but the vast majority of books don't have that. It's just, boom, this author.
Sure, sure. You'll also find sometimes in the acknowledgments that person's name. So I'm mentioned. Thank you for I'm called out as my writing partner, my writing coach, my editor, oftentimes my ghostwriter. I get that a lot because my own personal brand is such now that people know that if it's known I'm associated with a book, that's going to sell more copies because it's a Joshua Lysak book, and there's a unique aspect to my work, and so people want to get copies of books I'm associated with, which can sometimes be awkward because I've done books on, let's say, semi-controversial topics like divorce law. Honey, what's this divorce law book doing here? Why did you buy this? No, it's Joshua Lysak. That's some explaining to do at that point.
So I think you sort of answered this question before. So is the reason why most ghostwriters don't just, you know, I'm trying to get my head around why the ghostwriters aren't the authors and the authors are like, whatever. I assume it's because under the nature of ghostwriting, it means that it's not inherently not your own personal ideas and stories that are going out there. Is that the reason why? Would that be the reason why the ghostwriters are not the known authors? Because by definition, I mean, even in the term, right? A ghostwriter is someone who's in the background and their names typically, you know, your situation might be different, but their name typically isn't popularly known. They're not the ones getting the sort of primary credit and so on. Is that just because it's not their ideas and vision that are coming through in the book? Am I understanding that correctly?
Right. That's right. Our job is as structurers and refiners. I think there might be this idea that a ghostwriter is, now I will say this, that what I'm about to say is legitimate and it does happen. I've done a couple of books like this, so I can admit to this. The author comes up with the creative brief. I want to write a book that's about this topic. It mentioned these stories, which you can research on your own. Here's a couple of my stories. Here's a couple of recordings. Go write a full-length, industry-standard, general trade nonfiction book. And the author and the ghostwriter, if they have a conversation at all, is for a couple of hours. But the ghostwriter then goes and writes the book with their own ideas often injected, but making sure that they don't clash with what the author's personal brand or reputation is. And then the author slaps their name on the book. Those books are turned around relatively quickly. They tend to have a short shelf life. And they tend to correspond with current events where there's some celebrity who wants to sell 10, 15, 20, 30,000 books in a span of a few months on a topic that has a short shelf life, meaning it's not going to be relevant the next election or after a particular controversy is out of the news. So you see that it does feel a little bit grifty to me.
Yeah, that's what I'm thinking. This is sketchy to me.
Yes. Now I want to give an example of one of my clients. So Dr. Philip Ovadia is a cardiologist. Stay off my operating table.
Yeah, I know.
Is his book. He has probably 30 or 40 times mentioned in public that I was the ghostwriter for the book. Mentions me at the acknowledgments as well. And the reason why he's fine with that, and there's no, let's say, accused of using a ghostwriter, let's say, concerns around that, is because they're his stories. So when before and after he was in the operating room, he'd sit down with me. Okay, Josh, I got to get on a plane for the next, you know, got a surgery coming up. So we have half an hour. I would meet with him weekly and I would ask him questions. So it was very much an interview or a Q&A sort of a format. I know it works for books in terms of structuring them, in terms of readers' expectations. And this is a critical component. The book is not for the author. The book is for the reader. And authors don't necessarily know what's the best way to order their ideas, structure their ideas, how long it should be, how do you transition from one point to the next? How do we make it a maximally persuasive book? Because 92% of book sales are attributable to word of mouth marketing, according to Nielsen. And so they want authors want their book to be as word of mouth marketable as possible. But if they've never done it before, if they don't have the expertise, it doesn't necessarily make sense to try to ascend that learning curve themselves. Instead, sit down with somebody who interviews you, get your stories, your ideas, your experiences, your beliefs, and packages them in such a way, documents them in such a way, refines them in such a way that the book is maximally word of mouth marketable. And I think Dr. Ovadia has passed 40,000 copies sold now in a little bit less than 2 years. And he's very happy with the experience of the book because what it also is designed to do is to cultivate a deeper relationship with readers so that they will buy his masterclasses, his courses, his coaching, his consulting, one-on-one services, and so on. So the book is the beginning of a value ladder for the business. And that outcome, not only do I have a tangible demonstration of my credibility, a physical book that's good and the presentation is on point, but it's the gateway to my entire information product and in services ecosystem. What I just said in the last 30 seconds or so, that does not appeal to most people. But there is a slim minority of people that says, I'll have what he's having. And that's how I have a business.
Mm-hmm. Dude, from the entrepreneurial perspective, I get it 100%. I just don't think if you do that, I think if you do that, you're not an author. By definition, you're not an author if you don't write. Like, if you don't write your book, you're not an author. Definition of an author is a writer, you know, a writer of a book or an article or a document. I mean, I like I said, I get it. Like, I'm an entrepreneur as well as a creative person. So I can fully understand why I'd just be like, hey, yo, someone else write this book for me. I'm going to be doing all my other stuff. You're the writer. You know, I do all these other things as well. I can write, but I do all these other things. Like, I get it from the business perspective. I just, as a creative person, just like, I don't know, with any other art form, I guess it depends on if you view a book like a business, you know, simply like, more like a business product or service versus if you view it as a creative project. Like I said, you know, if I were making a painting and or a drawing and someone else drew it for me, I just gave it to an artist, a ghost artist, and they drew the picture or painted the painting, and then I put my name on it. I'm like, well, I can't then say I'm a painter. I could say I inspired it, or it's my vision, or it's my idea, or whatever. But if I don't actually do the brushstrokes, I'm not the painter or the artist. Does that make sense? Or do you have a different
that does. It comes back to what the goals of the person are, and everyone is a little bit different. I have no qualms about calling Phil an author because they're his ideas, they're his stories that he related to me. Some people have even changed what they call a ghostwriter, and they'll call that person their, like I said, their editor, their writing partner, their writing coach, or another word that's used now is scribe. For example, I believe several of the epistles of the Apostle Paul, they were known to have used a scribe, meaning that Paul was sharing the experiences, the stories, the doctrines and whatnot, and they were written down by someone else. So the idea of having a scribe or somebody who does the recording and the documenting and the structuring of the ideas, there is precedent for that. And I have no difficulty giving up the glory because I'm an author myself of my own books that have my name on it. So I don't have a.
I hope you wrote those ones. Please tell me you wrote those ones.
Oh yes, I did.
I'm like, don't tell me the ghostwriter has a ghostwriter who has a ghostwriter.
Our podcast today is sponsored by The Wellness Company. Did you know that nearly 90% of pharmaceuticals in the U.S. are produced overseas? That's an alarming statistic. If you don't have an emergency kit on hand, it's time to get prepared. The Wellness Company's medical emergency kit contains 8 potentially life-saving medications that every single American should keep in stock. It comes with a 22-page instruction guide on safe medical use for everything from snake bites to COVID to bioterror events. Another stellar product from the Wellness Company is Spike Support. Whether you got vaxxed or not, the virus is still among us in some capacity, as well as the related spike protein. Spike protein can cause brain fog, tissue damage, blood clots, and more. Spike Support is a detoxification powerhouse that aims to strengthen the body's natural immunity and flush out spike protein, so you can get back to that pre-COVID feeling. Get both of these products by going to twc.health/Zuby and get 15% off with the discount code Zuby. That's twc.health/Zuby and use discount code Zuby to get 15% off. Disclosure, the medical emergency kit is only available to U.S. residents.
It's ghostwriters all the way down.
Yeah.
Although I will say that is a practice that is known. If you go to Upwork or to Fiverr, there will often be projects that are posted on there from ghostwriting agencies. So an author gets a ghostwriter who gets a ghostwriter. and it's a thing. And every adjacency you are away from the client, the less you get paid.
Yeah.
So the one furthest I've witnessed personally is the author had a ghostwriter, who had a ghostwriter who had a ghostwriter who got paid $600 to write a whole book for the first ghostwriter, who was actually doing it for the ghostwriting agency, who had a ghostwriter's name attached to it. So the client thought that they were paying oodles of cash to the ghostwriting agency, to this founder of the agency, but it was, nope, it was someone that they never heard of that was multiple Upwork projects away. It can get pretty grifty really quick.
Yeah. I don't like it, man. I don't like that. I don't know, man. But anyway, man, I don't know. I'm somewhat disturbed by this. I don't get disturbed by things easily. And I'm like, man, I mean, I know certain things happen. And again, I think it's degrees, right? I think there's like degrees of sort of honesty. I think, do you know what I think it is with me? I think it's about the honesty and transparency is important, right? It's maybe this is how I think of it. This is an imperfect analogy. There are lots of guys out there. There's bodybuilders, athletes, model, fitness models, whatever, actors, you know, who use performance enhancing drugs, right? And you've got the ones who they use it, and either they just say they use it, or they're just quiet about it, and you implicitly know, okay, yeah, obviously that guy is on something because he's so, you know, gigantic and ripped and whatever, and you can't get to that level without it. But then you have guys who are using performance enhancing drugs, but then they're selling their supplement, you know, saying this is how they got their results, or they're outright denying it and they're lying about it publicly, or they're cheating in their competitions, you know, they're getting around the testing, or they're, so to me, like, ethically, those aren't the same, right? Like I don't use those drugs. I'm not a steroid user, and I never have. But the people in the former category, I'm like, I don't really have a problem with that, because they're honest about it, right? It's just like, okay, they're not using their physique to grift and sell something based off their physique, as if they acquired it naturally or misleading people or whatever. But then in the second category, there are. So I think I kind of feel the same with this. Whereas if someone is like, look, here's my book. I had a scribe, or I had a ghostwriter, or I had a, you know, someone else is involved, or even if it's on the title of the book, it's got their name and it's got, you know, with Joshua Lysak or with whoever did it or whatever. I'm like, cool, that's transparent, right? Like you get what it is. They're clear about it. I do think that there's something ethically I have an issue with someone just having their name on something and calling themselves an author and saying they wrote a book. Meanwhile, they didn't actually write any of it. Or, you know, it's even different to, okay, they wrote a whole first draft, and then they gave it to an editor who moved stuff around and tweaked it and made it better and so on. And they're involved in that process. Even that is very different to just like, okay, I just want this book written. I've got this idea. And then I just go and I pay a bunch of people. And then 6 months later, 3 months later, whatever it is, cool, I've got this thing. And hey, my face is on the cover and my name and none of their names and all this. Like, that seems really scammy to me, because I don't think you're being honest with the audience there.
Yes. I believe you've hit the key, which is the transparency and the authenticity. The sort of clients that I attract are people who want it known I was associated with the book. Hey, here's my ghostwriter, Joshua Lysak.
I get that.
Versus the sorts of people who, okay, I need you to sign a confidentiality and non-disclosure agreement. Those people tend to be a-holes in my experience, because that's how their entire personal brand is designed. The rejection of authenticity, the opacity around their services, around their expertise, their experiences, and they are they're optimizing for revenue over results. I mean, results in terms of their own professional accomplishments, helping their clientele get results. So there's the sort of people who are concerned about reputation management, making sure negative reviews don't show up online and they intimidate competitors and these sorts of things. Sending out letters from lawyers, you see. These sorts of tactics. And they are terrible clients. They don't pay very well. And so they're red flags of their own design. These sorts of people, and they are absolutely grifty for sure. What you described there with someone who has a first draft or a rough draft, I do get that a lot, where somebody says, hey, I started this book, I've got something, it's kind of rough, needs some help, or it's really well done. So people know that I work with Scott Adams, the creator of the Dilbert comic strip.
Yeah.
When he came to me, he had drafts that some people refer to it as, Joshua, can you Lysikize this for me? Meaning restructuring and refining. When I'm interviewing an author, I see it as a similar process. Whether you give me a first draft as an interview transcript of me having a conversation with you, you're giving me something. You're not disappearing for 6 months and say, give me a book I can put my face on. Those sort of authors are unsatisfying and unrewarding in more ways than one. Although I have been part of that before. You know, I think maybe the useful metaphor for music is the artist or the musician, when they record their art, is there not an editor, somebody who changes things, who makes adjustments to the original audio track versus, okay, we're just going to push this to the CD exactly as it was recorded? Or is there an editing process involved between the artist recording it and then the public hearing it?
Yeah, I mean, there is editing and mixing when you're recording music. My thing is, but you're recording the music, right? Like if someone else is recording, like if someone else is going in the studio and singing or rapping, and then you're putting your name and saying, hey, this is my song. You didn't even rap it. You didn't even sing it. Then I'm like, that's scammy. Like that's a scam. If like everyone expects editing and mixing, no one's expecting it to be like completely raw. Like just like no one would get mad at someone who writes. Any writer or journalist or author, everyone knows everyone has an editor, right? Something doesn't just go into the newspaper and just boom. But it's like, but that person did. The person whose name on the article, you know, they wrote it, so they can say they're the writer. I just don't think you can say you're a writer or an author if you literally did not write the book. I think that's a lie. If I just hired someone for like right off the bat and just they went off and did that process you described, right? Here's an overview. You go out, write the book. I think, you know, you're working with Scott Adams, like it's different. Everyone knows Scott is a writer. Scott can write, like he's a creative person, whatever. And he's transparent saying like, cool. I worked with Joshua Lysik on this book. But that's a collaboration. That's like, that's understood. I think if it's just like, okay, you hire that person and they do the whole thing top to bottom. Yeah, maybe it's your ideas, but they build the whole thing. At that point, I just don't think you're a writer. You might be an entrepreneur. Sure, you can be you're an entrepreneur. You're maybe there's some other visionary. There can be some other word for it. But I'd just be like, if you cannot write and you do not write, you're by definition not a writer. You're not an author. If you don't rap, you're not a rapper. If you don't sing, you're not a singer. If you don't do the accounts, you're not an accountant. There's nothing wrong with hiring an accountant, but I would never say I'm an accountant if someone else is doing my accounting and taxes, then because I'm not the accountant. You see what I mean? So I think there that's how I see it. I think that's how most people would see it as well. I'd be curious to know what the general. I'm actually very curious to know like how aware the general population is on how the sort of writing and authorship world works. I do think most people's minds would be blown if they found out that 90% of books were ghostwritten. I do not think that is well known at all.
Yeah. The metaphor that I return to that so many of my clients use is, and I mentioned before, and it didn't resonate with you, and that's okay, is this idea, well, these are my taxes. I hired a professional so that it's right. And oftentimes a tax preparer's name is under there. And because taxes technically are a business expense and a ghostwriter is a business expense, they often think of it in that way. Oh, it's my book. It's my taxes. It's my contracts. Right? I hire professionals to draw them up for me. Of course, the accountant doesn't go and make up numbers or that's a problem. The lawyer doesn't include useless clauses, unnecessary clauses in the contract. And the ghostwriter presumably doesn't make stuff up and then put it in the book. Although that has been a problem in the past with the sort of I would be okay calling them rather than ghostwriters. You could call them ghost grifters. I think that would be funny. Or grift writers. I think that would also be funny. Where they go and make stuff up. And then put it in the book. And then when the author gives an interview, it's obvious they didn't even read their own book. Tend to see that with the personal brands who are deeply concerned about their online reputation.
and reputation in the media, where they pay the $5-figure-a-month retainer public relations and crisis PR firms, and they have lawyers sending out letters over every little thing. Those are the people who are terrified of it coming out they had a ghostwriter, because they have had opacity and inauthenticity as part of their brand for so long. If that comes out, well, then the other thing comes out, and they are then exposed as a grifter versus someone who has been, let's say, transparent and has shared it openly for so long. You know, I think of authors that some people in your audience might know of, marketers, be they marketers or entrepreneurs. Gary Vaynerchuk, he is not shy about having ghostwriters on all of his books. Russell Brunson is known in the .com secrets and expert secrets. He had ghostwriters for his books as well. That's well known. But these are business people rather than, let's say, self-styled artists.
This is my point.
I think that aspect of it, I don't ghostwrite for artists, music or literary. I tend to ghostwrite for people who own a business and they understand how a book can lower customer acquisition cost and shorten the sales cycle. And they say, oh, that's a huge investment in the long-term life of the business. Yeah, let's do that. Yeah. And so they think of it as the same way as a business expense like
so,
taxes.
To be clear on something, so when you say that 90% of books are ghostwritten, I mean, because you included fiction in that. That's including fiction. Because I think that's the part that I think that's the part that would blow people's minds. And I think if you said 90% of nonfiction books or business books are ghostwritten, I wouldn't have been surprised. Right.
Yeah.
But if it's like actual fiction books, because that's where the actual artistry and creativity is supposed to really come into it. So if it's like, well, a novel is being ghostwritten, I'm just like, I don't consider that, like, I can't consider that person an author then. If they didn't write it, I'm just like, well, it's not yours. Like, I give the credit to the ghostwriter at that point. I'm like, okay, cool. Like, that's the ghostwriter's creativity and, you know, making those words flow and making all that magic that comes when you read the book. You know, it's interesting. This sort of leads into another idea, which is similar to how I feel about the whole artificial intelligence thing, right?
Yeah.
Where it's like, okay, if I just get ChatGPT to write my book, then am I an author? Like, did I write a book? I mean, at that point, I mean, if you get some super advanced AI where you just feed it a couple bits and then, you know, everyone's now a quote unquote author because anyone can feed this thing some scripts and then it writes a whole book. But I would say, I would make the argument that, like, no, you're not an author if you're not writing the book, whether it's another individual or it's some advanced computer program. You're literally not writing it. So you can call, I'm like, look, call yourself something else, but you're not a writer because you're not writing. I don't know that. I don't think I'm being precious either. Like, I don't think I'm being precious. I just think I'm like, as a creative, like, this is, you're not doing what you're, I don't know. You're like, you're not doing the thing. If you say you're a surgeon and you don't do surgery, you're not a surgeon. You could be a director. Maybe you sit in a chair in an operating room and the actual surgeons do the cutting and the stitching and whatever, and you direct and you're part of the process. Like, yeah, you know, maybe you're a surgical director or something, surgical entrepreneur. But if you don't know how to actually, like, use those tools and make those incisions and do the stuff, I'd be like, well, you're not a surgeon.
Yeah. I think this might be a good example of a Scott Adams reframe of two movies on one screen. You know, so an artist and creative can look at ghostwriting and have the perspective that you do. And an entrepreneur or a founder or a CEO could look at ghostwriting and have the perspective of many of my clients. Like, well, it's a business expense. I hire a speechwriter already for my speeches.
I think that's lame too.
A social media marketer.
For someone who does speeches, content. I also think that's whack.
Yes. So it's like, well, different perspectives. But I want to touch on something you mentioned earlier about the fiction. That does shock most people. There is a semi-controversy swirling around. I believe her name is Millie Bobby Brown, the young actress who is in Stranger Things. She recently had a debut novel that it was revealed she had a ghostwriter for. And the reception has been mixed. to put it lightly. On the one hand, it's my story, it's my ideas, and I believe she said herself, "I couldn't have done it out with I couldn't have done it without my writing partner," something along those lines. Whereas the other half of the fan base is shocked and appalled at this turn of events, versus people who know how the game is played. Oh well, yeah, of course you had a ghostwriter, you're a public figure, and so there's that presumption that they had a ghostwriter.
Yeah. Again, I think it's a matter of honesty. I think, look, if you've got a ghostwriter, be transparent about it.
Yeah.
Right. Because again, if you don't, I'll tell you why I think that annoys people. Because if you're not transparent about it, and it turns out that you do, but if I sell something as in, hey, I created this thing.
Yeah.
Right. And I sell it that way. And that's how I promote it. That's how I talk about it. That's everything. And then it turns out, oh no, there was someone else who actually created it on my behalf and I didn't reveal that to people and I pretended that that didn't happen, then it's dishonesty, right? It is dishonesty on my part, and I would understand why people would get mad, because they're like, hey, like, that's not honest, that's not authentic, you're supposed to be this honest, authentic person and you didn't do that. Whereas if I'm like, hey, I'm writing a new book, I'm working with this scribe, ghostwriter, writing partner, coach, whatever it is, maybe even give them a little credit on the book, cool, I can have my name in big writing, and then I can have with so and so, and then no one can be like, oh, he used a ghost. It's like, yeah, they're like, everyone knows, like, they're right there. So I think with this Millie Bobby Brown situation or similar ones, I think that's the way people feel like they're deceived, because they're like, oh, okay, like, this person wrote the book and that's their expectation, and then if it turns out, oh, they didn't actually do it. It's like, you know, if you've got, this happens in hip hop all the time.
Yeah.
In rap is different from most genres because it's very much expected that the rapper writes all their own lyrics. So in hip hop, if you have a ghostwriter and it comes out that you do, like someone like P. Diddy, everyone knows that he ghostwrites. He's even mentioned it, you know, don't worry if I write rhymes, I write checks, right? Like,
yeah,
that's so no one's going to be like, oh, Diddy has a ghostwriter. Like, you know, this is controversial, whatever. If like a Jay-Z or a Lil Wayne or a J. Cole or a Kendrick Lamar or a Tupac, if one of these artists was like, oh, there was actually someone in the background writing, people would be so upset, right? That would be like game over. That would be like, oh my gosh, like they'd be crushed. And the artists themselves would be crushed, because it's like, that's not hip. It's all about the authenticity. Like, all those words coming out your mouth, those are supposed to be your words. So maybe with me coming from like from the hip hop world, like, I have a certain sort of perspective about it. And I know even in music, it's in other genres, it's a bit different. But again, in those genres, in country, in pop, in rock, you know, they've got the writers' names are there, right? Yes. You know, people don't have CDs so much these days, but you look in the credits, you look in the song credits, album credits, it's got the names of the writers, right? Everyone is credited. So no one is going to be like, oh, that person didn't write that song. It's like, yeah, cool. Like, you've got all the names of the people there. But I think if they're not there, then you're now creating some type of deception. So maybe that's the point I'm kind of generally trying to make.
Yeah, I can agree that opacity versus authenticity, if you're going to be all one or all the other, then the consumer needs to be aware of all the details. Otherwise, there's that situation of them feeling cheated, and what else are you deceiving us about? And that's why so many public figures keep a lid on the name of their speechwriter, the name of their ghostwriter, or that it even had one at all. And they're terrified of it getting out, because that's not all that they've been opaque about. That's not all they've been inauthentic about. And so their reputation doesn't reflect the reality, and it's very precious to them. Yes. And so they're concerned that if it's known that they did not write every single word of their book, what else did they not do that they claimed to have done? Mm-hmm. And so it's lies compounded upon lies. And like I said, these types of people make terrible clients. As a ghostwriter, as a speechwriter, as a social media marketer. And of course, they don't write their own emails. They have copywriters for that. Yeah. They don't write their own speeches. There's a lot inside of the business that they don't do, because they're the owner, or they're the chief executive And it just so happens that their personal brand has the vast majority of the value. That's why someone's buying the book. That's why someone's tuning in to hear a speech. That's why someone's clicking, is because of their name, and they do not want to share the glory.
Yeah.
And because that's their personality type, they tend to have big egos, and they tend to know how things should be. And the only reason you bring in a ghostwriter, in my opinion, is because you don't know the best way to structure or your book or refine the ideas and whatnot. And so the people who have it all figured out, not just with ghostwriting, tend to make terrible clients all around, versus the people who are happy to mention who their marketing agency is or who edits their videos or make a referral to their ghostwriter. So I have clients going back 10 years who refer me to their friends. Hey, your book is great. Thanks. I use Joshua Lysak. Okay, cool. And then they, you know, then they show up, or they'll introduce me. Hey, here's my ghostwriter, Joshua. If you have the introduction. And in their case, they're, I think almost all of them are business people. They're business owners, they're entrepreneurs, they're founders, they're executives. And so they're accustomed to sharing the glory, let's say. And those people tend to make great clients. It's the secrecy first who tend to have it all figured out, and they tend to be afraid and say, well, I can't say it that way because then people will think this. And they're just constantly looking over their shoulder. And those sorts of people don't make good clients.
It sounds exhausting, man, honestly. Like, it's interesting. Throughout this conversation, I've been like, man, I knew I was authentic, but I'm more authentic than I even realized. Like, I actually wrote my books. Like, I actually write all my songs. I don't even write my speeches because I freestyle them. But yeah, it's interesting how pervasive all of these ways of doing things are. I don't know. It's a very interesting conversation. I didn't know we were going to dwell so much like just on the ghostwriting aspect, but I've never had a conversation with a ghostwriter before. So it's kind of interesting to get to understand the inner workings. We're going to need to wrap up fairly soon, but I did have a question. I was wondering how many books a year do you typically do?
The average has been between 6 and 9 for a while now. There was one year where I did, I think, either 13 or 14. That was exhausting. Don't talk about exhausting. That was exhausting. I've pulled back a little bit since then, and I've been focusing more on my own stuff because that's what else clients need from me. So I'm not just the ghostwriter. Oftentimes I get pulled into conversations with their marketing team, and I'm a bit of a ghost strategist, a ghost marketer, and so on. And so what works to sell a book works really well to sell courses, masterclasses, coaching, consulting, other professional services. And because I've ghost written so many books on so many topics and industries, I know the right way to word certain things or to introduce ideas, new beliefs to markets that other businesses want to be in. And so I'm consulted as sort of a ghost persuader. Now, hey, Joshua, we need your feedback on this marketing campaign, or we want to put together this value ladder, or hey, we're having trouble closing sales calls. What do you know about reaching this audience in this market? And so I have courses and services that are beyond the book, but are based on success selling book, because it's rather hard to sell books. It's much easier to sell courses, information products, I found. We could get into the psychology of why that is. And there's a bit of a publishing paradox here I'm going to talk about more in the future. Whereas if you release a course, you're going to make more money from a book in the short term. But personal brands who have a book at the beginning of their information product ecosystem tend to sell more of everything else over time, because the entry level is so quality, so cheap relative to a $500 course. And it's a tangible physical product, whereas a digital course or a download PDF doesn't have that same sort of presence that a physical book that you hold in your hand and, wow, this is good. And you see the author's words as communicated by the ghostwriter or as channeled by their literary medium might be another way of putting it.
I hear that, man. Joshua, where can people find and follow you online?
My best shenanigans are on the app I like to call Twitter X, because it's funnier than just calling it X, or Tafcat, the app formerly known as Twitter.
Oh, okay. Twitter. I was like, what does that stand for?
Yes. At Joshua Lysak, I have about 300 trainings on different topics on my YouTube channel. But my favorite and best stuff is part of the Best Way Persuasion newsletter, where I send a new case study every single month to business owners, entrepreneurs, and marketers for what's working for my author clients, my entrepreneur clients right now for advanced business persuasion. And I tease it as these are un-Googleable and un-ChatGPT-able strategies and tactics that are working for persuading the masses.
Awesome. Joshua, thanks so much for coming on the show, man. It's been a really interesting conversation, and definitely look forward to speaking again in the future.
Sure thing, Zuby. Thank you.
Bye-bye.
Sick with the slang, sick and I'm destined for fame. Do for the fam, not for the gram. Stunt me, you're destined for pain. I do not front, I do not scam. Put some respect on my name. Sick like Cobain, click and I bang. Y'all gon' remember the name. Y'all gon' remember the name.
You know how to book flights and hotels. All you're missing is a tool to plan the travel experiences you'll have once you arrive. That's why you need Viator. Book guided tours, activities, excursions, and more in one place to make your trip truly unforgettable. Viator has over 300,000 travel experiences to choose from. Everything from simple tours to extreme adventures and all the niche, interesting stuff in between. So you can plan something that everyone you're traveling with will enjoy. Real traveler reviews give the inside scoop from people who've already been on the experiences you're considering, so you can plan with confidence. Free cancellation helps you plan for the unexpected, and 24/7 customer support means you can travel worry-free. Download the Viator app now and use code Viator10 for 10% off your first booking in the app. Find travel experiences for you. Do more with Viator.
Without the ones like you who work tirelessly to keep things running, everything would suddenly stop. Hospitals, factories, schools, and power plants, they all depend on you. No matter the weather, emergency, or time of day, you're the ones who get it done. At Grainger, we're here for you with professional-grade industrial supplies. Count on real-time product availability and fast delivery. Call, clickgrainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.